presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with guitarist and leader of the band Los Straitjackets, Eddie Angel. In our conversation, Eddie talks about his guitar collection and the DePinto guitars that he uses live and the guitars he used on Los Straitjackets' new album, Somos Los Straitjackets. Eddie takes us through his musical history, growing up in Albany, New York, moving to Washington, D.C. to play with Tex Urbanowitz and his rockabilly band, and then moving to Nashville, meeting Danny Amos, whom he started Los Straitjackets with. Eddie describes the early days of touring in a van Danny bought, and the band's slow rise leading up to backing Nick Lowe currently, apart from the band's own gigs. Eddie talks about his friend and partner Danny Amos, and why Danny left the band, and the kickback from the surf music traditionalist, as to Los Straitjackets' style. Eddie describes touring in Mexico, where the band has its most enthusiastic audience, and he tells us about the soundtrack work the band has done. Eddie talks about Los Straitjackets' new album and the production process as they recorded it in bassist Pete Curry's studio in LA and in Chicago at Reliable Recorders using Wilco's gear. Finally, Eddie tells us about what he does to stay healthy physically and financially. To find out more about Eddie Angel and Los Straitjackets and to hear their music and see their tour dates, you can go to Eddie's website at eddieangel.com. That's eddieangel.com. Or the band's website, losstraitjackets.com. That's losstraitjackets.com. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my friend Eddie.
Hey there, Eddie.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
All right.
Are you in Nashville right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the mask. Are you still playing those DePinto guitars?
We still use them live when we play live.
Okay.
When we record, you know, we use an array of guitars, you know?
Yeah. Like, so, what's your guitar collection look like?
Well, my guitar collection, I got a lot of weird ones. My only really valuable ones, I have a Gibson 335 that I've had since I was like 13 years old.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then I've got a Jerry Jones Longhorn.
Sure.
I've got a Mosrite 12 string Ventures.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. I've got the very first electric guitar I owned, which was an Airline.
Uh-huh.
Like a K. I guess it's a K.
Sure.
Let me think. Hold on. I gotta go look. I mean, I got. Yeah, I know. I got a Hofner bass,
sure,
violin. I've got a Hagstrom bass. I've got these. I wonder if I could show you. I've got these guitars. I mean, I have a band called the Neanderthals.
Sure.
And I had these guitars made. My wife had them made by Hallmark.
Uh huh.
I've got these guitars that I used to play with a guy named Tex Urbanowitz in Washington, D.C.
Uh-huh.
And he would make guitars. And so I have a Tele of his and I have a Strat of his.
Uh-huh.
He used to make pickups. He was friends with Danny Gatton.
Okay, wow.
They would make Charlie Christian pickups.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so in fact, I have a funny story. When he asked me to join his band in 1980, I moved down to Washington, D.C. from upstate New York, and I went out to see Danny Gatton play it, and it blew my mind, you know?
Yeah, of course. And
I said to Tex, why'd you hire me, man? You could have Danny Gatton in your band, you know? And he said, well, I don't want Danny Gatton in my band. I don't want any musicians in my band. Funny, right? So I've got a Dan Electro. I got this.
You're looking at a wall of guitars, I'm guessing.
I want to show you my Hallmark guitars.
Yeah.
I have a Fender Strat 57 reissue.
Uh-huh.
I got a bunch of DePinto guitars. You know, I got some.
You know, with the eye thing on the mask, maybe that's what's screwing up your.
I know. Hold on a second. I'll show you these guitars, man. They're pretty cool. So check out these guitars.
Oh, wow. Those are fantastic.
Yeah, Hallmark. You know Hallmark?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
They make greeting cards.
The what? Yeah, right. The Saxon, which is one of my very first electric guitars, but not this particular one. But, uh-huh. but I think my first nice electric guitar was a Haxman 3.
Okay.
Right. I got these two. That's a Daniel Show and the Galliatone or whatever. That's a pretty good guitar, but I never played.
Yeah. They're all perfectly in tune, right?
Right. This is one of my Tex Stratic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It painted pink. Here's my nice bat. Here's a, can you see that Bandmaster?
I can. Yeah.
I bought that off of Gary Talent from the U Street Band.
Oh, wow.
His friend, a good friend of mine.
Okay. Very good.
This harp tone. This is a harp tone. You ever heard of that?
No, I haven't heard of harp tone.
Oh, yeah. Badfinger used to use them, and George Harrison used
them. Oh, wow.
There's a few of my guitars. But yeah, so I got some. So it's a kind of a strange. I don't have many really vintage stuff except for the 335, but I got all these kind of offbeat things, you know?
Exactly, yeah. Right on.
So, I guess that's kind of says a lot about me, I guess, offbeat, you know?
Did you grow up in Washington, D.C.?
No, I grew up in upstate New York.
Are you staying in there?
Yeah, I am. No, I grew up in upstate New York, Albany.
Okay.
But I moved to 1980. I moved to D.C. to play with Tex Urbanum.
All right. You moved there specifically to play with him?
Pardon?
You moved there specifically to play with him?
Yeah.
Right on.
He had a band called Tex Urbanum. It's in the Bad Boys.
How'd you know about him? I mean, there's no internet back then. How'd you find out about the gig?
That's right. Well, I had been in a band in Albany called the Star Spangled Washboard Band. And there's actually a clip of us on YouTube from like 1975 or something, playing at Pace College. Anyway, Star Spangled Washboard Band. So we used to play in D.C. and we had a big following there. And the drummer of the Washboard Band moved to D.C. and played with this Eddie Adcock. I don't know if you ever heard of him, bluegrass guy. Great, great banjo guitar player. So, I was down there visiting one time, and I called up the drummer, Scotty. This is 79. He said, "You got to meet this guy, Tex Urbanowitz. You know, he's a real rocker." Because we both had this affinity for rockabilly and 50s rock and roll. So I called Tex, and he said, "Hey, let's go have a drink." So I had a drink, blah, blah, blah. 6 months later, Scotty called me up and said, "Hey, Tex wants to know if you want to join his band." I said, "Yeah, man." Because I was at like loose ends. I was ready to like join the Navy or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I moved there in January of 1980, and I stepped into this other world, man. It was like the Beatles and Hamburg or something.
Wow. I mean,
his record had just come out, Hot Rod Man, and it was getting airplay on the WHFS, the radio show. So we were like the most popular band in town, and it was just fantastic, you know?
Right on.
And yeah, so it was right when rockabilly was sort of happening. You know, a few months later, the Stray Cats came out. And,
sure.
Well, anyway, it sort of put me on this trajectory of this is what I got to do. You know,
yeah,
this is,
of course.
This is really the thing, you know. And so I moved to the band, you know, eventually we broke up and I moved to Nashville in 1986.
Okay.
And
but why Nashville?
Well, I'd moved back up to upstate New York. I was playing in a band. And everybody said, you know, we were kind of we knew we had something. We were getting interest from people in New York City and stuff. But at that time, you know, there wasn't much guitar oriented stuff.
Yeah.
So one day the drummer said, "Hey, you know," he read something about Nashville. We just said, "Yeah, let's go, man." We up and moved in 1986, and I thought I was going to be here like a year or two, and here I am, 35 years. But that band
before the wave.
Yeah, exactly. And so the band I moved here with got a record deal with CBS Records. It was, so we knew we weren't delusional.
Uh-huh.
We got dropped from CBS.
Okay.
They didn't even put the record out.
Oh, wow.
They said it wasn't country enough. And so my first instinct when that happened was to start an instrumental band, which was suicide. You know, I mean, no way. You know, yeah. Nashville in the late 80s. And my friends in the music business, I saw the look of pity in their face, you know. And but I had met Danny Amos. Uh-huh. One of my very first gigs that we played in Nashville. You know, I would always do like some Link Ray songs. I'd do Run Chicken Run, and that was going back to my Tex days. That was his influence on me. And so we played a gig, and Danny Amos came up to me and said, "Hey man, I never thought I'd hear anybody play Link Ray in Nashville." And he said, "I'm Danny Amos, and I used to be in a band called the Ray Beats." And yeah. So I was really impressed by that, because they were in my world, that was like a big deal, you know.
Sure, of course.
So when the band I was in broke up, I the first thing I wanted to do was start an instrumental band. So I got in touch with Danny, and I knew a drummer, Jimmy Lester, who I'd actually met that same night. This is 88, and we started a three-piece instrumental band, so it's called The Straitjackets. And so Danny and I had all these instrumentals that we'd written that was, to this day, I still do, like Calhoun Surf and University Boulevard, Rampage. I had first done a 45, like in 1981 when I was still in D.C., I had my first 45 guitar instrumental called it was Rampage and Link's Tale, sort of both of them an homage to Link Ray.
Sure.
So backtrack for a minute. When I was playing with Tex, he used to always play a tape of Link Ray, early Link Ray, as a pre-show. Link Ray and Ivy Rorschach were his two favorite guitar players. So one day he said to me, "Hey Eddie, I think we should, you know, work up some instrumentals for the set, you know."
Yep.
And I remember thinking, "Man, that's a terrible idea, man. Nobody's here." But here's the reason why I thought that. I was 27 years old, and I started playing guitar at 12, and that's what my first song was, you know, Walk Don't Run. You know,
sure,
that's the first
thing,
you know. So I thought, you know, I can't be cool. I was doing that when I was 12, you know. I took to it like a duck to water. I could play. Link Ray just came to me naturally. You know?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, and I started writing instrumentals, and I didn't think much about it. I didn't think of myself as a guitar instrumentalist, but when I always thought of myself as a songwriter, though, you know.
Yep.
And so somewhere when we started, once we got Los Straitjackets going, and especially in the 90s I realized, you know, I have a knack, man. I can write instrumentals. I don't know. I didn't know I could, but this is now what we're doing. Yeah. So anyway, that's sort of a short history. The original version of The Straitjackets, we kind of fizzled out because Jimmy, the drummer, had another gig with Webb Wilder. But we got back together. Other things happened, but around 94, we got back together and we started back up again. And at this point, like, Danny had started going to Mexico a lot, and he loved Mexican culture.
Sure.
And so he had a big box of these wrestling masks.
Yeah, La Lucha.
And we started digging like these Mexican bands, like these 60s bands.
Yeah.
Like Los Teen Tops and Los Rockin' Devils. And so we're trying to think of a name. We wanted to do the band again.
Yeah.
And we're trying to think of a name, Los Something. We wanted to call it Los Something because we thought it was just kind of funny, you know?
Yeah, of course.
We said, "Ah, screw it, just let's call it Los Straitjackets." We were originally The Straitjackets.
Yeah.
So that's what we did. And so in 94, at this point, I had gone through a bunch of other things, bands breaking up. I was in a rockabilly band called the Planet Rockers, toured with Morrissey, broke up.
Wow.
Moved to Chicago, played with a band called Big Guitars from Memphis, got kicked out of that band, moved to Austin, Texas, you know, for 6 months and said, "Screw this." I went back to Nashville.
Yeah.
So I in 1994, when I moved back to Nashville, I'm like, I just want to get a gig. I don't want to be in a band anymore. Hopefully there's like a country guy I could play with, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And, but when I moved back, 94, my wife and I, we had been in Austin for 6 months. I needed a place to stay. So Danny was the only guy I could think of, Danny Amos.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "Yeah, sure, you can stay with me." We stayed with him for a month till we got on our feet. And I remember thinking to myself, well, I don't want to, you know, it's just for a favor to Danny, let's get Jimmy over here and play the old songs, you know, in those straight jacks. Yeah. So we did, but unbeknownst to me, Danny was having like a midlife crisis, and he wanted to be a band. He had a pretty good gig. Uh-huh. He was working for a TV show called Nashville Now.
Of course.
Remember that? Yeah. He was like a stage man. That was a good gig, you know?
Yeah.
But he saw the writing on the wall that was kind of coming to an end, and he wanted to be in a band, you know? And so he kind of, behind the scenes, doing these, got it going. Like he said, let's go record these songs. I said, okay, we'll record. And he paid for the recording, which is only a couple thousand dollars. We did it like 2 days.
Uh-huh.
And but he got us a record deal with, he sent tapes out, got us a record deal with Upstart Records. He was good friends with Ben Vaughn. Do you know Ben Vaughn, who that is? Ben Vaughn?
The name sounds familiar, but no, I don't think so off the top.
Okay. Well, he was kind of a quirky singer-songwriter from Philadelphia, but he wound up moving to LA and writing for TV shows. He wrote for the Third Rock from the Sun, the music.
Yeah.
But he was good friends with Danny. He produced our record, and I think he actually got us a record deal. But Danny bought a van, used van. Yeah. And so we were ready to go, man. That was we could go out and tour and do $500 gigs because we didn't have the van,
Wow, $500 gigs. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, some of them, they paid it all. But we did, and we toured. And, like, so I was smart enough. Like I said, I didn't want to be in a band, but I knew something was happening that was, different.
Yeah.
It was like the universe was saying yes. Everything was, we were getting, things were happening.
Sure.
We're getting a record deal. We got a booking agent. So I ran. I was smart enough to go with it, And we got in the van and toured for about 3 years straight.
Wow.
Yeah, man. We just toured constantly.
Were you married at the time?
I was married at the time. Wow. Yeah, my wife. She's very understanding. But she wanted me. She knew I was a musician. She knew I had to be a musician, mm-hmm. She knew I wasn't going to be happy otherwise. And she encouraged it. And she, the times when I was wanting to quit, she'd say, no, you're not quitting. It wasn't like that, So we toured. And after 3 years, I realized, man, we're making a living doing this, This is pretty cool. And things just kept going like that. It was always like an upward trajectory, slow but sure. And I still feel like that. Like,
sure.
We tour with Nick Lowe now.
Exactly. How did that come about?
Okay, so that was our manager, Jake Guralnick, who we met through our very first record label was Upstart Records, which was part of Rounder, and he and this guy named Glenn Dicker were working for Rounder, and they had their own little label called Upstart.
Okay.
So now Jake's our manager now, and Glenn Dicker is our label guy at Yep Rock. So we're still with those same people. Anyway, so Jake managed Nick Lowe.
Uh-huh.
And Nick Lowe's on Yep Rock, which is the label we were on.
Yep.
Yep Rock, meaning Glenn Dicker's label.
Uh-huh.
So so it came about like that. We met Nick at a Yep Rock anniversary thing, and we backed him up for a couple songs.
Uh-huh.
And he thought he liked us, and then he put out a Christmas record around 2013 or 14, and he thought. So he wanted a tour behind it, and his band that he'd been working with, a couple of the guys had died, and so he gave us a shot. He put his toe in the water by doing the Christmas tour at first,
Uh-huh.
Then he started thinking, this is pretty cool. So it evolved into a full time thing, and now we just put a full length record out with him last year, Indoor uh-huh. Safar. If you wear that, and it's a good record, man. And
of course,
it's been a good marriage. I mean, we've obviously benefited a lot by being associated with Nick, but I think we've helped him too because we're up there, and with wrestling masks on, which is kind of weird, but I think about it, you know, we take away the age factor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? If he was up there with 60-year-old guys that were super-duper musicians, it wouldn't be the same, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
As guys, we took away the age, and it gives you got to give Nick a lot of credit for going out on a limb like that. Oh, you know, yeah. He's got a sense of humor, but he took a lot of shit probably from people in England. Like, what are you doing, Nick? These guys? But I think we've proven. I think he's been proven that it was a wise move.
Yeah. Does Nick live in Nashville as well?
No, he lives in London.
Okay.
I'm actually the only one in Nashville now.
Oh, really? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because everybody, I'm the only original guy.
Yeah.
Danny, the original guitar player, lives in Mexico now.
Does he really? What part of Mexico?
He was in Mexico City. Then he was in Acapulco, and his condo got destroyed in the hurricane. Yeah. So at the moment, he's in Cuernavaca.
Oh.
Outside of Mexico City. I just talked to him last night, as a matter of fact.
Right on.
You know, he left because he had multiple myeloma. He was dealing with that. So he's been dealing with that since 2010, but
wow,
it's amazing. He's in remission right now.
Right on. So, that's great.
Yeah. So he's doing good. And the original bass player left after 3 years, and we got Pete Curry.
Yeah.
Pete lives in L.A.
Okay.
Pete's the only guy who can claim to be in, had ever been in really a surf band, you know?
Yeah.
The Halibuts and the Torquays.
Yeah.
He knew everybody in that whole scene.
Yeah.
Where Los Straitjackets, we never called ourselves a surf band. You know, we just called ourselves rock and roll guitar instrumental.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I totally understand. Do the diehard surf people like John Blair, like, do they give you like less cred?
Well, I think we got a little bit of that early on pushback, like, these guys aren't really surf.
Yeah, yeah. You know?
But John Blair, he does one of our, he used to do Talisman, one of Danny's songs.
Oh, wow.
And the Ventures recorded Calhoun Surf. So, yeah. So I guess it was, I think the real purists, you know, probably get that. But we came out, it was, I didn't know it was even going on. Pete kind of told me about it. You know, when we first came out there was like some grumbling, like, these guys are, you know,
surf.
But we never claimed to be, you know. I was coming from the Link Wray, Chuck Berry school.
Yeah. What about Duane Eddy?
Yeah, I love Duane Eddy. Yeah. I love his tone, and I'm certainly a fan.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a big fan. I think he's got the best guitar tone of all time. And I got a funny Duane Eddy story for you in a moment. But Danny was coming from, he's the guy that did Dick Dale. He could do the fast tremolo picking.
Sure, sure, sure.
And he's also a Shadows fan.
Uh huh.
So, and we all, the common ground we all had was the Beatles, so, you know.
Yep.
Anyway, so, but anyway, let me tell you a quick Duane Eddy story if you want.
Yeah, of course.
When I was 19 years old, I was in a band. I moved out to California to be a songwriter, right? Uh-huh. I met a piano player from L.A. named Dave Bloom. And we had hit it off really in a strong way. In fact, I'm still in touch with him. And so when I moved out there to be a songwriter with him. We're living in Venice Beach. Are you in California?
Yeah, I'm in Northern California.
Okay. Venice Beach, this is 19, early 70s. And, I know. So I had a contact with a publisher, because I had been in a band in New York,
uh-huh.
Leeds Music. So I said, let's go to Leeds Music and play some of our songs. Leeds Music was in Hollywood, right across the street from the Capitol Tower. And this one song I'd written, they really liked. They said, we want you to come in every day if you want and write, use the studio, record, write, blah, blah, blah. So me and Dave, we would try to do that. And Dave had a friend from high school who would sing our demos. Her name was Deed Abbott. And so we would go in there, and after about a few months, this is going on for a few months, and Deed said, hey, guess who they hired down at the publishing place? Duane Eddy. So Duane Eddy's now our go-to guy to play. I had to sit in a chair in front of Duane Eddy and play my songs. And so So Duane Eddy and our friend Deed fell in love and eloped.
Wow. 2 months later.
Wow. Nobody heard of him. Didn't hear hide nor hair for 30, 40, whatever, many years until fairly recently, you know, and I ran into him a few times, but it's crazy. And then he wound up living pretty close to me. I'm in Nashville. They lived in Franklin.
Yeah.
Which is like
half,
right. So that's my Duane Eddy story.
Right on. did you guys ever play in Mexico?
Oh, yeah.
Like, how sketch is it going across the border with all your gear?
We never did that. We would fly down and use gear there.
Okay.
But that's our craziest audience and biggest, craziest, wildest audience.
Sure.
I mean, our fans there were like teenagers and stuff, you know, where our demographic in America has always been older, and, you know, now it's people 60s. But still, like, whenever I get a friend request from a teenager or something, it's always Mexico. You know?
Okay.
And we first went there in 2000, and I was nervous. You know, I thought, what are they going to think of the mask? You know, are they going to be offended? Or, but no, man, they loved it, and they were flattered.
Yeah.
Because I think it was the first time ever an American band was copying Mexico culture.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So they were very flattered, and so our audiences have always been really huge down there. You know, and we just played a festival there last year, Wildo Festival. It was a bunch of bands like the Mummies, the Sonics.
Sure.
It was a lot of fun.
Those are all kids compared to you guys.
Yeah. Right. Well, not the Sonics. Yeah, we've had some crazy gigs down there, but we played at a baseball stadium once.
Wow.
For about 100,000 people. We opened up for this big South American band called Los Cadillacs Fabuloso. Oh. But anyway, yeah. You heard of them?
Yeah, I have.
Wow.
Yeah.
We did 3 gigs with them down there.
Do you guys play like amusement parks and stuff like that?
Amusement parks?
Yeah.
No. I don't think we've ever done that.
Oh, all right. It seems like your style of music and amusement parks seem to go hand in hand.
And
roller coasters and stuff like that. Anyway.
Yeah, right. No. We played a few kids' shows. We tried doing that for a while, but a lot of times the kids are scared, you know.
Did you guys do any soundtrack stuff for SpongeBob or anything like that?
Not SpongeBob, but we're actually friends with Tom Kenny, the singer, the voice of SpongeBob. We're very good friends. Uh-huh. In fact, he makes an appearance on our new record doing a voiceover. But we've done, our music has been used in lots of movies and TV shows.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. It's on the website now and you can't even remember them. But, go ahead.
What brought about the new record? Like, I mean, you clearly you're a songwriter, so you're writing songs, but I mean, was there did the record label come to you and say, hey,
we've never had any pressure like that.
Uh-huh.
We've always been able to do whatever we wanted to do. You know, that's been the beauty of it. You know, mm-hmm. We've always been able to make the kind of record we wanted to make. You know, because that's the beauty of not being a success, I guess.
Oh, but
we're having a hit. You know,
yeah.
We never had. That's the beauty of this kind of slow trajectory uphill. You know, and not having like some success and then, you know, have the follow it up with something. So we've been able to do our own thing, you know, and this new record, I really am happy with it. I really think it's a good record. Every song is good on it. I don't think I can say about any of our others.
Yeah. The first single's up on YouTube.
High Wire.
Yeah.
And the second, there's a second song. One on.
Oh, is there really?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Polaris. Check out Polaris.
So is Polaris the song by the Finnish band or is that your guys's?
No, that's us. We wrote that.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, probably, I couldn't think. We knew there was another song called Polaris, but we couldn't think of a better title. So.
Yeah. I think Insect Surfers was the.
Insect Surfers had one, yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't know there was a Swedish band, too.
Yeah.
Sputnik? The Sputniks? Is that who did it?
What's that?
Was it the Sputniks? Who did Polaris?
I think it's Insect Surfers.
Oh, yeah. I knew the Insect Surfers, but you mentioned a Swedish band.
Oh, aren't the Insect Surfers like from Finland or something?
No, they're from L.A.
Oh, they are.
Actually, they're from D.C. originally. They were in D.C. the same time I was.
Oh, okay. All right.
I met Dave Arnson, the lead guy from the Insect Surfers. The first time I met him, I was playing in a club in D.C. with Tex Rabinowitz, and he was pounding on my foot, yelling, "More reverb, more reverb."
Yeah. And what do you use for reverb? Since you brought it up,
I just use a Fender amp with reverb. Okay. You know, we use Fender Deluxe.
Yeah, Deluxe reverbs. Yeah. Right on. You any encounters with people like Dave Ronsky? You know from.
Yeah, we know Dave.
Yeah,
sure. We know Dave Ronsky. Pete Curry is really good friends with Dave Ronsky.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, and what about bands like? Have you know anything about La Lom?
Who?
La Lom. It's all instrumental, and they play sort of cumbia music, so Mexican inspired music.
I think I've just found I just did hear something about them.
Yeah, they're. I mean, not to take anything from you guys, but they're also a very good band. They wouldn't consider themselves surf, but they're surf.
How do you spell their last name? How do you spell it?
It's LALOM.
La Lom, yeah. So yeah. I did.
It stands for Los Angeles League of Musicians.
Okay. Yeah. How about Krungbin? Have you know about them?
What's the name?
Krungbin or Krungbin?
I know that name because they played a festival up here, but I don't know their music. I haven't had a chance to see them.
They're pretty good, but they're huge. I can't believe how big.
They're massive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They play like. It's all like atmospheric stuff.
Yes, but exactly. But, yeah.
Yeah.
No, but your stuff is way more fun than atmospheric stuff.
Yeah. We always wanted it to be fun. You know, that's when we started. That was our philosophy was we wanted this to be fun. We want to entertain people and make it fun.
Yeah.
And we knew that, you know, we had to keep people's attention. That was part of the reason we wore the mask.
Sure.
You know, they're used to looking at a singer. And so that was part of the whole shtick. And we wanted it to be like, we like vintage entertainment.
Yes, exactly.
We want to be like the Ventures or, you know, the Shadows. So that's why the matching suits, matching guitars.
Yes, exactly.
Choreography.
I mean, the mask is a genius move. That's for sure.
It gave me a career, man. It gave me a career. I remember I said that one time. I was doing some some jazz thing, you know, talking to a class, you know, and I said that to the kids, and the instructor took umbrage at it. Oh, really? Is that all it takes? And, you know, I'm just giving you the facts, man. I mean, that's, I wouldn't have a career. You can play jazz guitar you want, you know. But you know, anyway.
Oh yeah, but, I mean, just because you wear the mask doesn't mean you aren't fabulous musicians.
Right, exactly. That's it. We could back it up with songs.
Exactly. If you guys weren't great musicians and great songwriters, then it wouldn't. It would be a novelty.
Yeah.
And you guys are way more than a novelty.
I think so.
How do you do? I mean, are you doing well financially? Like, does this made you? I mean, is this your livelihood?
And
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I could say I could retire tomorrow. I don't have to do this.
Really? Right on. Congratulations.
Part, it helps to be married to a smart wife who knows how to live, take care of more, and live frugally and know and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I never made a ton of money, but I had some good years where I'd have a song in a movie or something. But most of the time, it's just, you know, average. But just it's live. I tell people, if you want to be a musician, then you better learn to live frugally, you know, and invest and save because, you know, so I've done that. I've done well because of that, because of being smart with a smart wife, you know?
Yeah,
so, you know,
exactly. Yeah. And most of your dates are fly dates, or are you guys traveling around in a bus or a van?
Well, we usually always fly to somewhere, start the tour because we're all spread out.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we rent a minivan. We usually rent a if it's just little straitjackets, we can do it in a minivan. Sometimes we need a minivan and a car. When we tour with Nick, which our next tour coming up is with Nick Lowe,
and
he'll have like a tour manager and a front of house guy. There'll be two man crew, And he'll have like a Sprinter van with all the gear in it.
Uh-huh.
And then a minivan.
Okay. Wow.
Look at Jack's tours. We don't have, this is the four of us. Sure. You know, we load our stuff in.
And you're doing your own guitars and everything.
Yeah. We don't change guitars. I see these bands where they play a different guitar every song. We just use the same.
Sure.
It's using the Pentos the whole night, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And was it Chris DePinto? Is that he the one who?
Chris DePinto. He's got a shop, a little mom and pop shop in Philadelphia.
Yeah. And is he still making the guitars?
Yeah.
All right.
And he's a good guy, man. Great guy.
Oh, yeah. Solid guy.
But listen, if you want vintage guitars, I got a whole list of what we use, if you're curious.
Sure. Like, well, go ahead.
Okay. So some of the record, sometimes, and this new record, we usually always mostly Pete Curry's studio in L.A. He calls it the Power Fun Room. So he's got the gear. You know, Pete's been, you know, we use the 60 Jazzmaster, 62 Jaguar, 66 Tele.
Wow.
A 66 Epiphone Casino.
Wow.
Yeah, a 60 Gibson 330, a 65 P bass, and a 57 Richard Strat. He has a 62 Bandmaster, 63 Princeton, 63 Showman. He's got the reverb unit, Tube Echo Plex.
Wow.
And then a lot of it we recorded in Chicago at the Reliable Recorders in Chicago, a guy named Alex Hall.
Okay.
And that's where we did a lot of Nick stuff there too.
Okay.
And he's friends with Wilco. So Wilco let us borrow a lot of their gear.
Yeah, they have a lot of gear.
Yeah, it's incredible. We went to their warehouse. Yeah. You heard about that?
Yes, I have heard about their warehouse.
It's unbelievable, man. It's everything. But from them, we got their Jazzmaster in the Casino 335. We had a Nacho Telly. You know who that is?
Of course, yeah.
No, Nacho. Okay, yeah.
Nacho Caster.
Yeah, right. Nacho Caster. And there was this guitar was an interesting one, a Framus guitar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, a hollow body.
Yeah.
And I actually used it on one song just for like this overdub part on the song called Virgon.
Okay.
And you get a tone with those off-brand guitars are so cool because, you know, like anything else, you know?
Exactly.
And so here's the thing. We don't use any effects, no pedals.
Oh, what? Right on.
Yeah. So if you hear like there's a fuzz sounding bass on Virgon, but that was just from the overdriving the, you know, channel and on the board.
Yeah.
So no effects pedals. The studio, and we had a Princeton amp there, a deluxe reverb.
Uh-huh.
We had a National amp, Westwood.
Wow.
An Epiphone Century and a Magnetone Panoramic. And I'm sure we used something. Yeah. Yeah. So there was a wide variety, you know, of stuff we used.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. What do you do when you're not playing music and stuff? What do you do for fun?
Well, I come home. I live this kind of a dual life. I come home, you know, and I don't go out much. But I got three kids. They're all grown. They're out of the house now. But my son is 24, and he's got his own band.
Okay.
It's called Wasted Major, and sometimes he's been playing with Little Straitjacket sometimes.
Oh, right. That's good.
Yeah, Vermont, I don't do much. I just try to eat healthy and go to the gym and work out.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's about it. You know, I don't read.
That's what's wrong with all that. That's all that stuff.
Yeah, I try to reverse all the bad effects from touring, I guess.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
Eating all the crappy food and whatever, drinking too much, you know.
Yeah.
So I try to reverse all that.
Yeah. You must have very good air conditioning in your house because you've been wearing that mask for over 40 minutes.
Oh, man, I'm used to it.
Does it ever drive you nuts?
Yeah, it has. You know, mainly, I'm used to it, but sometimes you're in a situation where you can't wait to get it off because it's asphyxiating.
Yeah.
You know, more than anything, more than hot, you can't breathe.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm used to it.
Well, thank you for your time, Eddie. I really appreciate this. This has been great. And I hope when you guys are out, I don't know if you're coming to Northern California anytime soon, but when you're out here, I'd love to meet you in person.
Yeah, man. Well, we're going to be in Sacramento. I know that.
Okay.
I don't know. Where are you, on the coast or where are you?
I'm in Napa. So Napa. I think you've played the Uptown Theater here.
Yeah. Napa. Yeah, we did that recently with Nick.
Yeah.
We're going to be at the Ivy Room. And,
oh, really?
We're gonna,
in Berkeley, yeah.
Yeah, in October. We're doing the Hardly Strictly with Bluegrass with Nick.
Oh, right on.
And that weekend, we're playing Moe's Alley and
yeah, of course,
cruising Ivy Room in Albany with the Chuckleberries.
Okay.
Oh, anyway, that's close as we're going to get you, I think.
Yeah, that's close. That's pretty damn close. So I'll run into you there. I appreciate it, Eddie.
Yeah, nice talking to you, James.
Nice talking to you. Okay, bye-bye. Bye-bye. Have a good day. Thanks for listening to Have Guitar, Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys. Thank you.